First of all, can I just say that New Zealand First, as a caucus, has had a chance to study in detail this proposal, and our conclusion is that there is not enough in it for New Zealand, but for us to support it. What I would say to you is what I would say to my counterpart in China, if the question arose. But as you know, we've had, for the last 20 years or so, a free trade agreement in proportions. China's virtually had a free trade agreement with us, and we have not had one with them. And in the extremities of this deal, another 17 years, it'll be almost 37 years that we have waited to see what could be achieved in this economic relationship. It is a trade matter, and I am responding, though, as the leader of New Zealand First, to say that there's not enough in it in the sense of what New Zealand as an economy needs for us as a caucus to be able to support. We would like to have had, but facts are facts. And we've got the backdrop of other trade deals that we have had in the past on issues like balance of payments to examine the prospects of with respect to this transaction or this deal. Any questions?
So when you say not enough in it, do you mean that tariffs aren't being phased out quickly enough? What more could be in it for New Zealand First to support it?
Well, as I say, we believe that the tariffs aren't being phased out nearly fast enough with respect to the China side of the deal. I think our good faith over two decades warrants that.
Is it not worth it in the long run, though, to at least have no tariffs there?
Well, it's more than half your life a long run. We've come at the end of this 17-year period. We'll have waited 37 years for a change. That's an awful long time to prospect an advantage for New Zealand in 2008.
What's New Zealand First view on the labour movement clauses?
Well, the labour movement clauses should not be in this legislation. They are an immigration matter and should be examined as part and parcel of the economic and social logic of such measures. But they, apart from the work and holiday scheme, which I do agree is a good idea, we have shared that with many other countries. There's one downside of it, of course. It's one way, and will be when the United States changes its law, which I believe they will. The only workers' holiday or seasonal workers' holiday scheme to have an only one-way provision.
So, how big a factor is the labour movement in New Zealand First opposition?
It's one factor, but it's an important one. Of all the countries that we have had such a working holiday scheme arrangement with, this one is unique.
You mean if this was, if the tariffs were phased out faster, you might have supported it?
Well, if I could see enough in the benefit for the New Zealand economy, then we may have supported it. But when you see the change to the overseas investment rules of this country, the massive threshold that we've adopted, 10 times what it used to be just 4 years ago, and also the labour market provisions which should go one way, and when you see that the balance of payments will worsen as a consequence of this, not improve, because the growth of their exports exponentially will be greater than the growth of ours, which are limited anyway, and one of the key fundamental elements of an unsound economy, that is a serious balance of payments deficit, will worsen. Bear in mind this, though. I make no bones about it. I think that Phil Goff and his team have done a marvellous job with their hands tied behind their backs, because they were going into negotiations almost like show poker, where one side had all the cards and the other side had very few.
Can you explain how you will actually operate, you know, next time you visit China? How do you represent the government and this policy if you oppose it as New Zealand First leader?
Well, as I said, whatever I say to you, I would be saying to my counterpart in China, if the question arises, though it is a trade matter handled by Phil Goff. But if I'm asked, I'll give you the same answer I'm giving you today. There's not enough in it for New Zealand. We would have expected much, much more.
Why don't you regard it as a threat to the confidence and supply agreement?
Because it's not. This is a no-surprise arrangement. The government knew full well our view on such trade deals, that we'd examine them case by case and see what was an advantage medium and long term for New Zealand.
What do you make of points raised by Mike Moore and last night by John Key, who said it would be odd for a foreign minister not to support this vehement position of not supporting the CPA.
Well, John Key's a new boy on the block and doesn't understand constitutional arrangements, and Mike, my old friend, should realise that when you've departed the political coil, you should perhaps stay out of it, while others still in the business get on with doing what they think and can prove is in the economic interests of New Zealand.
Do you think it will put you in an awkward position, though, when you're overseas and you're asked about New Zealand having a free trade deal with China? Will you be in an awkward position having to say, I can't discuss that?
No, I'm not in an awkward position at all. I would be saying, I would have hoped we could have done much better.
So you will actually say that while you're overseas?
If I'm asked, I would tell the truth. I would hope we could have done much better.
Would you be speaking as Foreign Minister, or would you be speaking as New Zealand First Leader when you say that?
Well, obviously I'll be in that circumstance speaking as Foreign Minister, and I will tell them the circumstances behind which we went into trade negotiations with half a free trade agreement already, trying to bargain up out half of it. That is a very difficult circumstance, and I give full mark to the trade officials and Mike and Phil Goff
were
doing the best they could.
So as Foreign Minister, you'd be saying that you don't think the deal is good for New Zealand?
No, what I'm saying is the circumstances over two decades of radical economic change put us in the most invidious bargaining position. That New Zealand First has always believed to be a fact. We've said so for two long decades, and I have, before that formation of New Zealand First, talked about where this was all going. Today we have a free trade agreement, which we believe could have been better. It's not enough for New Zealand as an economy to pick up what may at worst be under 200 million in value, whilst they pick up billions in value already and have enjoyed that for the last two decades.
But when you're overseas, you are representing the New Zealand government, not New Zealand First. So surely you would...
With respect, we all understand the constitutional arrangements. It is very, very frequent that there are distinctions drawn when a foreign minister is offshore. He does not ever just parrot the same thing that might be the mantra of the last person who wrote a policy statement out of New Zealand. He seeks to, and she seeks to, and if it happens to be a woman, engage in a meaningful discussion, maybe a pointer to the wise for their own negotiations into the future.
But as foreign minister, you're supposed to... back
to
the government.
Well, can I just come back to see it? Can we deal with the free trade agreement? And whether it's beneficial? No. Now, you're talking about an ancillary matter to the side. I'm happy to talk to you about that later. But could you please point out to me what and where your questions relate on this free trade agreement? And then I'll deal with the other matter of constitutional nicety, which you apparently want to talk about.
But aren't trade and foreign policy intertwined? Can you really make the distinction between the two?
Australia has a trade minister and a foreign minister. We have similarly. So does the United States. So does other countries. Apparently, they're not as interlinked as you think they are.
While the free trade arrangement was being negotiated, did you have no ability to influence what the deal was going to be?
Well, look, I encourage the Chinese to be as liberal and fair and reasonable as they possibly could, given that we were the first off the block. In every respect, I was hoping for something better.
But were you involved in any negotiations, or did you not have an ability to say
I shouldn't have to repeat the history of this, but we've had people on the road for a long time, namely Jim Sutton and Phil Goff, on the road more than 3 years, seeking to bring this to fruition. And in every respect, I sought to encourage the Chinese, in this case, to be as fair, large and liberal with a small economy as they should be.
You couldn't persuade them.
Pardon?
You couldn't persuade the Chinese.
You might say that, but then apparently no one else could either.
The Prime Minister in China has said, though, that while this is about trade, it also does impact on our foreign policy and our relationship with China in that regard. So if the Prime Minister's saying that, how can you say that it is not a foreign policy issue?
Well, as a fact, does it have some impact? Yes, it has an impact. Do the Chinese understand what I say when we say we could have expected and wanted more? Of course they do. They're realists. They understand precisely what I'm saying.
So you're saying they distinguish between you being New Zealand First Leader and Foreign Minister when you talk to them about this issue?
No. They distinguish between aspirations built on what I believe economically would have been achievable had we not made some dramatic mistakes beginning of 1984 onwards, and where we've got our negotiators into a very difficult circumstance, trading with an open hand, just like playing poker with an open hand. Very difficult to win a game like that.
As New Zealand First leader, I mean, there's another issue with the Chinese and the sell-off of Geta, 25% affecting United Energy Networks, which again, not unlike Auckland Airport, where the issue of a foreign investor looking to buy a New Zealand asset. Where do you stand on that deal? Do you think the Chinese are going to get a good deal there as well?
You know full well that we have always had the view that strategic assets should remain in New Zealand hands, particularly ones which are based on our own resources, which were built up by our grandparents, and which should not be for sale to some foreign country into the future. I mean, we happen to think we are gatekeepers here and trustees for New Zealand's long-term economic and social development, and I predicate my views on the basis of that.
How strongly are you going to campaign on this issue?
Well, I think you should worry about the campaign when the campaign comes around.
Isn't this the campaign already starting, though, and that you're looking to differentiate on some key issues with the election in mind?
Now, how can you say I'm looking to differentiate when you know that New Zealand First was founded on some fundamental principles, 15 of which we set out before you on the 18th of July, 1993, one of which was this issue of asset and savings, and the other is value for the country.
It doesn't hurt.
And the other one was also immigration, which I realised last week you were trying to put forward as being something new for New Zealand First. That is sad, because it's demonstrably, palpably, not true.
It doesn't hurt, though, to ramp up being the voice of difference compared to Labour and National, does it, though, in election year?
Well, are you becoming a political advisor now?
I'm asking you.
Because if you are, I'm not buying, okay? And drinking up from TVNZ.
Talking of the immigration issue, Dale Jones made some interesting comments last week that seemed to cut across what Peter Brown had said. How is that? What's your view on what Mr. Jones said last week?
Well, as I said to you last week, that I didn't really disagree with either of them. It's accepting the emphasis and the approach that they had taken. The reality is the first principles we set out in the founding of New Zealand First included the issue of immigration. And we admit in the first opening words that we will always need the infusion of people from abroad in terms of economic and social needs. But that said, immigration should never be used as an excuse for failing to have educated, trained, prepared and properly employed our own. That is still a key issue with us and will go on being one. Funnily enough, or not funnily enough so much, but oddly in New Zealand's circumstance, we have the only country in the world which thinks that immigration should be off-limits. I don't know any other country thinks that.
Did Mr. Jones' comments undercut the message Mr. Brown was trying to project?
Well, if they'd have gone further to qualify, they wouldn't have, but maybe they did marginally, I don't know. But there wasn't a point. The reality is, just as a reminder, we did not time the Stats Department release, which is surely the evidence you need to prove that New Zealand First had manufactured the story. Now, it might be only a small point, but I think it's relevant.
Have you talked to Helen Clark since the signing, or, you know, before this press conference at all? Do you think she would be comfortable with you raising with the Chinese the fact that, you know, she could have, or New Zealand could have got a better deal?
Well, Helen Clark always knew what our view was, always knew what our aspirations would have been in such an arrangement, and she will not be surprised when I say I wished and hoped that we could have done better, and there are circumstances as to why we have not. One is our history, one is the maniacal economic experiment we went through with disastrous effects for New Zealand, and this deal not being what it should be is just one more example of what I've been talking about for a long, long time.
But there's a lot being made of the difference between you speaking as New Zealand First Leader and you speaking as Foreign Minister. As Foreign Minister, aren't you supposed to champion this deal? It's a key part of New Zealand's foreign policy.
It's not a key part of our foreign policy at all. It's a key part of our trade policy. How we relate to China in the Pacific, how we relate to China in the UN, and a whole lot of things to do with strict foreign policy is not trade policy. That's why they have different ministers dealing with trade and different foreign ministers in China, in Australia, in the United States, in every other part of the world, and now in New Zealand.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then you speaking out, well, you criticising this deal when you speak to the Chinese, is that you not straying into the area of trade policy?
Oh, so if they ask me a question, I just go silent? I don't think so.
Well, you can't have it both ways.
The Chinese are practical men and women. They know exactly what I mean. They would always be striving to do better for their country in the same way as I'm seeking to set out clearly why I think we could have done better. And I'll give you the reasons. Now, if you don't believe them, please debunk them for me. But you know full well that China, as have most countries, had the benefit of a free trade agreement with New Zealand on their side for a long time. And we were told, when this experiment started by some of these political geniuses, that all these benefits would immediately befall New Zealand. It didn't, of course, so perhaps you should predicate your questions at them, not the person who it turns out to be right after all.
I think there's not a difference between aspiring to something better before the deal's done, but once it's done, what's the point, especially when you're meant to be representing the New Zealand government?
Because I hold out the belief that the Chinese might see it my way and might agree in a short order that this could be improved. And they might do that in circumstances where they're negotiating with others and see, well, maybe we could have done better with New Zealand.
Are you saying...
We're 1.3 billion people, they're 4 million people.
I mean, the Prime Minister would say that New Zealand's foreign policy position on this trade deal is that it's good for New Zealand. You would be speaking against that.
No, what I'm saying is it could have been so much better for New Zealand.
Yes, but that's surely speaking against what the Prime Minister's foreign policy position on this issue is.
No,
the government.
I'm saying it could have been so much better based on history and based on the present circumstance. You know full well what happened when Douglas threw open the doors and let loose the dogs of inflation in this country. Threw our exporters from a feast to a famine all in the space of 9 months. It all happened in front of your face if you were awake and alive or out of school at the time. Well, I was. And I'm just saying there's a few economic chickens coming home to roost here. So don't be surprised if someone's pointing out a few fundamental facts. It could have and should have been better. Thank you very much.